Talk Radio 790 KABC, Peter Tillman at 10, hour 2, obviously, brought to you by Larry Miller and Sit and Sleep, where Larry, of course, will beat anyone's advertised price. Your mattress is free. And American Vision Windows. If you haven't ordered your windows yet, why? It'll keep out the heat, keep out the sound, change the quality of your life. No more leaf blowers or jerk neighbors because you don't hear them. Engineer Steve always says, I don't even feel the heat till late in the afternoon because he has the windows. You should too. They'll save you up to 30% on your utility bill. Go to kbc.com, keyword windows. You can see my installation and why they're an Angie's List winner every year and why they do such a great job. It really will change the quality of your life. So there's an interesting deal with North Korea right now. A North Korean diplomat vanished in mid-July, but he's actually defected. And this could be the highest ranking defection North Korea has ever experienced. North Korea right now threatening us, saying they're really upset at this advanced missile defense system we're planning on putting in South Korea. And they're warning of retaliation. They have fired several missiles into the ocean earlier this month with this North Korean diplomat defecting. They could be very, very angry. And you never know what they're going to do because not that many people know about North Korea. Well, Wendy Simmons kind of does because she not only got admitted, but she traveled around North Korea and saw stuff that most people don't get to see. The book is called My Holiday in North Korea, The Funniest Worst Place on Earth. Hi, Wendy. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. Good to be here.
So the first question everybody asked when they heard you were going to be on is, how did you get in? Why? You're not Dennis Rodman. Why did they let you in?
I don't know why they let me in, but it's not very hard, at least my experience. Was.
Really?
It's a real common misconception, nor is it illegal to go there. I just went through China. There's two different travel agencies that I know of that work out of Beijing, and they organize all of the logistics for you. So I corresponded with the agency called Koryo Tours, and they did all the legwork.
Wow. And how long did it take to get admitted? And once you get there, who greets you and what happens?
Well, so you have to plan your entire itinerary before you arrive, and hour by hour in my case. And then I flew to Beijing, and the Korean government won't actually issue your visa until 24 hours in advance. So when you arrive in Beijing, you're not 100% guaranteed that you're going to have a visa. But I got to Beijing, and the company, Koryo, they did a briefing about what I should and shouldn't do, what will get me arrested and what won't. And then I flew over to North Korea the next day. And when you land in North Korea, again, my experience, when I descended the airplane stairs, we were the only plane in the entire airport. There was no other people. There was no ground crews. There was no trucks. There was nothing. It was completely empty aside from my plane and the few passengers that were with me. And, I walked to the airport. I cleared immigration, which was a couple of booths and security. And the second I walked through the doors, I met my handlers, my government guides, two women, and then went outside and met my driver, and I was not without these three people for the rest of my stay.
Yeah, they're like attached to you every single second, correct?
100%. I went on a private guided tour as opposed to a group tour, which is what most people do, and so my experience might be different than other people. But unless I was alone, unless I was in my hotel room, which was the only time I was allowed to be alone, I was with these people at all times. I was not allowed to even go to the bathroom by myself.
Did you get, really? They would walk in when you did your business?
They didn't come in the stall with me, but one of my handlers would go with me.
Jeez. Did you get a sense that your room was bugged in any way?
I'm sorry?
Was your room bugged in any way, do you think? If that's the only time you're...
It never occurred to me because I was sitting by myself and, it's not like I talked to myself. And they could check my, check my phone and you'd have no outside telephone line and there's no internet. So I couldn't imagine that I'd be much fun to watch. But I did have one experience when I was doing yoga and playing music out loud and someone busted into my room a few minutes after I started, which, could have just been a coincidence or, it's one of the many questions you ask yourself. Is the room bugged? You have no idea. But
I know in reading the book, there's stuff you can't bring in. I know you can't have anything that's anti the great leader. What else is prohibited where you would get arrested or what activities would you have done where you'd be arrested immediately?
Anything that the North Korean government perceives or deems either anti-North Korea or anti-leader or religious. will get you into trouble. And that is very arbitrary. So I eliminated anything that I thought they might perceive that way. And, you know, to the point where I got, you know, a little bit paranoid at the end, I had like a Korean phrase book that I didn't want to carry around with me anymore. Right. And I didn't leave it because I was scared they would think I was being anti-Korean by leaving my phrase book behind.
Boy, so you got to think about everything wherever you go. Now, did you stop at restaurants? I know you did some schools. I saw the orphanage. By the way, Wendy's book is great because she's a great photographer, too. And you get a sense of how stark, even in a crowded city, it just all looks so stern and stark and you know, forced smiling and forced events. It looks awesomely.
It's another planet. It's truly incomparable to any place else I've been. And I've been all over the world. And I didn't go there to write a book. I just went there on vacation. Like, I've gone to 84 other countries. And to 84 other countries, I've gone and came back and had no compulsion to write about it. But North Korea, you know, I make the reference to Alice in Wonderland throughout my book. It was truly like falling through the rabbit hole. I have never been any place like it. There's no normal life. And, you know, when you try to explain it to people who haven't been, the words in English sound the same, but they don't mean the same thing. You know, there's no stores. There's no people going about their daily lives. There's no children running in the streets. There's no people standing on the corners talking to each other. It's just that kind of life does not exist there. It's not.
Okay, I got to ask you. So did you, and I'm talking to Wendy Simmons, author of My Holiday in North Korea, The Funniest, Worst Place on Earth. And we're trying to figure out how to deal with them and how to get in their heads. And it's very hard to get information about what the Supreme Leader is thinking. Did you ever have, as I'm looking at your book and the photos, I'm wondering if anybody ever mouths the words, help me. It looks like those people are just, everyone, like the kids standing there are doing like the fake smiling, and you want to go, help me, help me. It looked like everybody wants to get out.
I joke about that in the book, that I thought some of the local handlers, you know, were giving me those eyes that said, please take me from here.
Right.
You wonder all the time how much people know and how much of the Kool-Aid they're drinking, because the things they say to you are just absurd. You know, I showed up at a hospital one day and there was no patients in the entire hospital. And, you know, I'll say, where are the patients? And they say, oh, they just left. You know, that's like the craziest.
Well, you had that. You had that at a bunch of places, didn't you? Was that where you had the microscopes and the microscopes had their covers on still, and they were all standing there looking
at the plastic?
Yeah, looking at the microscopes.
Staring at nothing. It's theater of the absurd, 100%. And so, you know, you wonder, do they believe what they think they believe? You know, it's a conundrum from start to finish. How much the people you're interacting with actually believe what they're saying?
So no stores. And you're driving around. How do you pronounce it? Pyongyang. How do you say Pyongyang? Is that it?
Pyongyang.
Pyongyang.
Yeah, well,
okay.
That's how I say it.
Pyongyang.
Yeah.
Pyongyang. So you're driving around Pyongyang, which is the big city, and you said, yeah, there's it's buildings. It looks like there's trade going on in commerce. But when you go into schools, are they vacant also, even in the big city?
Well, I went to one school outside of Pyongyang, and, you know, you're not free to roam around. They bring you in, they bring you up, and they bring you to a single classroom. And there were students in that classroom, and they had obviously been trained for our visit. We weren't the first people to come through there. So whether there were children in other classrooms, I have no idea. I didn't see any of them. And the children's palaces, I went to a few of those. These are sort of, I call them extracurricular jails. They're after-school programs, they tell you, are for all children, but, you know, are just for the elite. And, again, it's very staged. You don't just go anywhere and wander. So you only ever see what they want you to see. So whether they have, you know, a single other school besides the one they brought me to, you know, I assume, but I didn't see any.
What about the media when you're in your room? Do you turn on the TV? Is there TV? What do you see?
In Pyongyang, they had a TV, surprisingly, in my hotel. And in that hotel, shockingly, they had a foreign media station. They had the BBC. In the rural hotels that I went to, one had a TV, and it was the typical Korean propaganda that all the people in Korea watch, which is two state television channels, and they just play nonstop propaganda films.
Boy.
And then propaganda news.
It is amazing. And then when you got out of Pyongyang, you said Pyongyang was a city. As soon as you get out of Pyongyang, it's a whole different look.
Oh, 100%. It's a third world country. I mean, it's on par with any place you would go in, you know, India or Africa or something. It's you know, very rural, very poor, very third world.
Man, how do we deal? We got this guy now who defected. How are they going to treat that? What are the repercussions, and who's running the deal? I mean, other than the Supreme Leader?
You know, I wonder, I imagine first I'm going to just, you know, try to discern whether he's a true defector or whether he's a double agent. And then I imagine once that's proven, they'll try to gain as much information as possible about the great leader, his intentions, his relationship with the military. That's a big part of it. You know, whether or not he is supported by the military or opposed by the military. And, you know, that information will help determine whether he's stable as a leader or if there's a coup brewing or, you know, how stable the government is. I'm sure he'll be a wealth of information that our country has never had access to.
Yeah, we really don't have access to that. It's fascinating. So what about also, you said there's no internet, obviously. We talked about the schools. There's no commerce going on? You don't see anybody shopping anywhere?
Well, when I was there 2 years ago, I saw nothing. And when I'd ask questions about stores and, you know, markets and that kind of thing, they would just say, yes, we have. But, you know, they wouldn't take me to them. They wouldn't show them to me. The one or two stores that I managed to see were, you know, dark and empty. And, you know, I saw no evidence of it. The only store I was brought to was a propaganda store that was designed specifically for tourists. And it's the only place I could spend money. And it was all, you know, pictures of the great leaders and videotapes of the great leaders and books written by the great leaders and bags with the great leaders' faces on it, that kind of thing.
I love when you went to the football game. I remember reading that part where the woman looked at you like, please don't say you want to go see a football game. And you said, yeah. Yes, I do. And they had the stage. They had this empty stadium. They waited to bring you in. And then they explained that everybody's at work, which is why there's nobody in the empty stadium. And then they trucked out the teams to play soccer.
It certainly seemed that way. And then halfway through the game, you know, a few hundred people showed up in, you know, single file, or, you know, one big line of people came at the same time. So, you know, you kind of put the puzzle together, and it seems like they put together a football game.
All the work. Why not just say don't come? Why would they even want you to be there? So you can come home and tell us how bizarre it is?
Well, you know, they opened the country up to tourism because they needed currency. And whether or not they thought through the ramifications of inquiry minds and, you know, loose lips, I'm not sure. But
it's so much more bizarre than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Dino, my screener, wants to know, can you buy a Kim Jong-un bobblehead? Do they have them for sale?
I'm sorry, can you buy a what?
A Kim Jong-un bobblehead. You know, the bobbleheads that go up and down?
No, that would be seen as offensive to the great leader. And if you brought one of those in, you would probably be arrested.
And you get taken away. Before you go, what about the demilitarized zone? I know you went down there. What's that like?
The DMZ?
Yeah.
It's not. It was not at all what I thought it was going to be. On the north side, it's disguised as farmland. I imagine they have more going on than meets the eye. They'll tell you that the great leader wanted that land to be peaceful and just for the people, and they have a village, which is rumored to just be a fake village. And, you know, they have a building that describes how America lost the war. And, you know, the whole thing is craziness. But it's very quiet, and, you know, there's not really, you don't feel afraid. It's not bustling in any way. There's just a couple of soldiers, and it's antithetical to what I thought it was going to be, but that's just what they show you. So, you know, for all I know, there was 7,000 people hiding behind the door.
Dressed as trees and cattle. I mean, wow.
Yeah,
a fake farm and a fake village.
Full land for the growing of rice, I was told.
All right, I let you go, Wendy has an interesting background, and she's toured so much. You really just take up and go, and I'm looking at the list of countries. Ethiopia, Bhutan. I mean, I'll give you one word. Let's do a word association real quick. Ready?
I hope.
Chad.
Oh, Sahara Desert.
Well, Czech Republic.
Mountains. I don't know.
Kenya.
Animals.
Namibia.
Sand dunes.
Wow. Jordan.
Rivers. Valleys.
Where did you have the most trouble? Where were you the most frightened or most uncomfortable?
Probably Democratic Republic of Congo.
And why did you go?
The reason I go everywhere. I want to see the whole world.
And you really thought, I'm out here alone, they may never hear from me again?
In Korea? No, I never thought that. I really didn't. I would never go someplace I thought my life was seriously on the line, and people may think I'm naive or dumb, but I didn't, you know, I wasn't afraid. They treated me very well. I followed the rules, and, you know, maybe I got lucky, but I didn't ever feel, you know, very afraid.
And where are you going next?
Well, I'm going to France for pedestrian this weekend, and then I'm hoping to go to Afghanistan or Sudan or Chile this fall.
Well, stay in touch. Remember us with the stories. One last thing. You're traveling with a person, and I know you gave them names like old leader and the middle leader and the younger leader. When you're with somebody all day, every day, do they let their guard eventually, like day five, and you're driving around with them, they spend a lot of hours with you, and you're talkative, you're funny. Do they let their guard down ever, and were you surprised to hear them slip or say something that maybe you both caught that they should not have said?
You know, they did their jobs very, very well, and they rarely ever let their guard down. There was, you know, moments here and there that were few and far between. And when they did let their guard down, it was, you know, it was one of those moments that the reason you travel, you know, those moments of connection when you break through. And, you know, I think that that's for North Korea in particular, those are the moments you hope are going to affect change in that country. They're so repressed otherwise. But I had those moments more so with Fresh Handler, my younger handler.
Right.
In her 20s, older handler, and she was pretty well schooled at
and what was the oh wow? So what was the oh wow with the 20-year-old? What did she reveal that you were surprised to hear her reveal?
You know, that she liked America, that she wouldn't mind being in America. She understood sarcasm. You know, she got my jokes. We had many jokes at older handler's expense. you know, that kind of thing. So she was more, you know, she was more Americanized in a weird way than she was Korean. But so I think, you know, she represents a different generation that maybe has been more exposed to other cultures and has a stronger sense that all is not what it seems.
Boy, it's like a fake village that they put up for a TV, like a TV shoot, like false storefronts, false everything. Yeah, the whole thing is just for show.
There's a real people living real lives.
Somewhere.
At the same time, they're being told an entire history and, you know, a falsehood about what the world looks like. So I think, you know, in some ways I say in the book, it's like the Truman Show. And, you know, little by little, people are starting to wake up that the world outside the borders and what the great leader tells them is not what it seems.
Wendy, it's a great book, and the photographs are great and stunningly odd. It really does look like a different planet. Wendy Simmons authored my Holiday in North Korea, The Funniest Worst Place on Earth. The Twitter is at Wendy Simmons, and her website, wendysimmons.com. And thanks for coming on. Safe travels, and we'll talk to you again.
Thank you so very much.
Yeah, you take care. Coming up, we're going to talk about polling. There is a shocking Washington poll, a D.C. poll, about Washington elites and who they're saying they would vote for. And the numbers are stunning. And I started wondering about polling, and I'm sure you do too, about how accurate they are, what questions they answer. Is there experiment or bias where you ask a question so you get back a certain answer? We're going to talk about all of that and take your calls too when Peter Tilden at 10 continues right after this. Talk Radio 790 KABC. Start your day off right. Mornings at 5 with McIntyre in the Morning. Doug and T-Ray cover the day's top stories and stuff you'll want to know with context and a laugh. And for really early risers, catch the NBC 4 News at 4:30, right before Doug and T-Ray at 5, making it a little easier to get up and head to work. Mornings on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Wanted to talk polling. We got Tim Carney joining us. Tim is a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and a senior political columnist at the Washington Examiner. Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for having me.
I'm fascinated with polling, and you hear all kinds of stories about they don't matter until Labor Day, but people watch them closely. And one of them that I was fascinated with is this poll about Washington elites. And what it says is that Beltway insiders prefer Hillary Clinton to Donald Trump by an overwhelming margin, and she won 62% of Washington elites polled compared to 22% supporting Donald Trump. And then you go down, let's see, 1 in 5 Republican insiders said that they would support Hillary. What is going on in Washington and also at adjacent Maryland?
So, and it includes Northern Virginia as well. But it's not just a geographical sample. What we did here, at the Examiner, we got Echelon Insights, a polling company, to do this. And so it had to be people who really followed politics, people who were employed. We got a decent portion are employed, representing the area in the government, or at least working in and around politics. And so it's not just a question of kind of a liberalism of these areas, because a full 30% of those polled identified as conservatives, but it's people who are really dialed into and are professionally connected to politics. And so this whole appeal of an outsider, which is Donald Trump's strong point, actually counts as a negative inside the beltway, inside the bubble. That's probably the simplest way to understand it.
No, that makes sense, because they want business as usual. They don't want somebody shaking it up. So it's not necessarily just Donald. The polling could have been close, similar, whatever, for any other outsider. Yes? Is that a good assumption or not?
Yeah, and in fact, one of the things we asked was, do you expect things to change? Look at Bernie Sanders won 23 states. Donald Trump is a Republican nominee. It certainly looks like a changed election, but do you expect things to change or basically be business as usual after this election? A full 62% said that they expected things to be business as usual, and that goes along with the fact that they expect Hillary Clinton, which out of those three, out of Sanders, Trump, and Clinton, Hillary certainly represents the status quo.
So when people look at polling now, and I guess my opening premise was you're told, hey, you know, until Labor Day, the polling doesn't matter. Is that accurate or not? Because I mean, Hillary's pulling ads off in Pennsylvania because the polling there tells her she doesn't need it. So polling, as far as the candidates are concerned, matters. And then Donald Trump has to look at states where he's starting to do advertising on Friday. That's how they figure out where they're going to put their resources and how much change they can affect in those places.
It's definitely inaccurate to say the polling doesn't matter. It would also be error to look at it and say, oh, that means he's going to win that state or she's going to win that state. The polling matters, but it doesn't sort of tell you a simple story. It tells you part of a bigger story. And for me, the numbers that we got in our poll of the Washington insiders sort of really confirms that people are confident Hillary is going to win and that she's not going to sort of be the change agent she promised to be in the Democratic convention. And when you look out at the state polls, what it shows you, when there's a state that's a real strong Republican state where Trump is losing or is up maybe one, a Georgia, a Utah, something like that, I don't think that shows you that Hillary is going to win one of those states. I think it shows you what type of voter that normally votes Republican isn't going to vote for Trump. And there's a couple different kinds. And some of them, it's sort of the highly educated. Even outside the Beltway, you go to a place like Atlanta, you have a lot of bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, white Republican middle class who are turning away from Trump. You go out to Utah, you get a lot of religious people, very strong family, very conservative values, in sort of more stronger religious communities, like among Mormons or in certain populations in places like Michigan and Wisconsin, they're very anti-Trump, while down in the South, they're very pro-Trump. So the polling definitely matters. It's just sometimes a complicated story.
I'm curious, Tim, with polling, you look at the Zogby poll, which says it is a 2-point race, and then you look at other polls where you see it as a 7-point or 9-point race. Coming from an advertising background, I know when I do focus groups, I did polling. Polling is really only as good as the questions you ask, how accurate you do it. And I mentioned experimenter bias. You know, when you do an experiment, if you're looking for an outcome, you can phrase something in such a way, even not intentionally, that gives you that outcome. How do you know when you're looking at polls how well that poll was written, conducted, executed? Because we see a lot of polls, we report a lot of polls, and every time I do it, in the back of my head, I think, boy, I wonder how well this poll was done. I wonder how accurately they did it. I wonder if they just got people off the toilet on hard lines that didn't want to answer on a Sunday, so they said, yeah, sure, I'll vote. How do we know? How do we discern that? The public's listening right now. They're invested in both candidates. There's somebody listening right now who wants Trump to win, somebody wants Hillary to win, and they read a poll, and they're elated because they go, oh, he's up 7, she's down. How does the average person navigate all of that?
Step number one is to never put too much stake in any one poll. We polled on the question of trade and whether it's positive or negative, and then I wanted to compare that to how the rest of the country feels, and I saw the results all over the place. So I had to take a step back and first look at the sample sizes. Generally, a bigger sample, you know, 1,000 people is better than 400 people. Anything below 400 people, you're not going to want to count on. But then you look at, is it registered voters? Is it likely voters? Is it just adults? If it's just adults, that's going to skew in one direction, while registered voters will skew in another direction. Well, likely voters are sort of at the other extreme. And then, as you said, you look at the wording. If it's an issue poll, you say, what are they asking? And sometimes they sort of feed you some of the information. Given that free trade has created all these jobs,
right,
do you support it or not? And we use the word free trade. Other people use the word international trade, and other people use the word foreign trade. I bet if you really paid attention, you could find a pattern in that. So the main rule is look at a lot of different polls. I go to a website, Real Clear Politics, that just simply averages the most recent polls, and that right there is a huge step over looking at any one poll. So
which
that's
is true. That's the first place I go. You look at a poll? Can you, being in the business, can you look at a poll and sniff around and go, you know what, not so good?
So yes, I can, but mostly I say, I'm going to be very skeptical of this poll unless other pollsters come out with similar data or with a similar trajectory. I rarely look at a poll and blow it off, unless there are some where you'd have CNN conducting a poll and they said, oh, well, this sampled 700 people, and then you looked at it and you realize in the Republican primary it was only sampling 200. And in that case, I say, okay, a Republican primary poll of 200 people, I can write that off. And so
it's almost meaningless, right?
Yes. So 400 is sort of the minimum on a statewide or local level. And on a national level, you're going to want more. If you start to see an absurdly high number, like 10,000 people polled, well, that means it was all done by computers, which takes away from the value of the large number.
Ah, very good. So I'm talking to Tim Carney, visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and also the senior political columnist at the Washington Examiner. That said, I know you got to go in a couple moments to be somewhere else. Looking at all the polling you see now, what do you discern? And knowing that Donald Trump just made a change in his campaign as far as moving Manafort down a bit, bringing in another guy to run the campaign, and looking at swing states, et cetera, what's your sense of the electoral map at this point?
So the electoral map looks really bad for Donald Trump, and I think the shakeups are a reflection of a sort of desperation that I think they wanted to wait until Labor Day to kick it into high gear, but I think they expected it to look sort of status quo, typical as normal. But now the way to look at the map today is that the typically swing states are leaning strongly to Hillary, and the typically leaning strongly Republican states are the swing states. So that's not a good position to be in. That's the position Donald Trump is being. If he's worrying, what am I going to have to do to win Georgia? Well, first of all, he's got a lot less money than Hillary, and second of all, he's going to be spending that little bit of money trying to hold on to states that they really ought to win. All of a sudden, where's the money going to be to fight over Colorado, to fight over Ohio and Florida? And that's so it would take quite a turnaround, I think, to make in the national numbers to make the electoral map look like something that Hillary really has to worry about. She's smart enough that she will worry. She'll play like she's down, but she's starting to aggress and open up the map and go after places like Georgia, and that makes Trump have to play defense and keeps him from playing offense.
Although this is one of those elections where at any moment, with another email dump or an event happening, things can change. And have you seen polls drastically shift based on an event, or do they go slowly toward a direction?
You can have polls drastically shift based on an event. The reason I don't see that happening here is you do not have a candidate who's had more exposure during his run in history than Donald Trump has. And he's running against a woman who has been in the public eye longer than any other candidate in history. So Trump over the last year, Hillary over the last 30 years, there's very little that voters are going to learn about them they already don't. So for Trump, if he's going to make a comeback, I think it's going to have to be a long, slow log. I don't see any big jumps happening in the next 3 months.
And the problem is it's not necessarily 3 months, because you got, like, Minnesota starts early voting September 23rd, so it's less than.
That's exactly right, that the being ahead in the early fall is more valuable today than it has been in any previous election because of how widespread early voting is.
Fascinating. Tim, thank you so much. I mean, we hear polls every day. I wanted to put them in perspective. I wanted to also see that insider poll, because I found that. That tells you what the elite in Washington are thinking or preparing for. Tim is a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and a senior political columnist, The Washington Examiner, and it's at TP Carney is his Twitter, and the website is WashingtonExaminer.com. Check it out. Tim, love to have you back on again as this thing progresses, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
You take it easy. When I was talking about an event that could happen, here's Roger Stone. It's a little longer than a minute, but give a listen, because Roger Stone, we've had him on a ton, and, you know, Roger's got a circus. On the other hand, listen to what he had to say.
I was very specific in that I said that I had communicated with Mr. Assange, that I never said I met with him or that I spoke with him. We have a mutual acquaintance who is a fine gentleman. I happen to be one who thinks that Assange is a hero. I think Assange has taken on the ruling elite of both left and right. The left loved Julian Assange when he exposed the dark secrets of the Bushes. And here he's exposing the dark secrets of the establishment. I believe that Mr. Assange has all of the emails that Huma Abedin and Cheryl Mills, the two top Clinton aides, believed that they had destroyed. So if that is true, and he releases them through this election as he released strategically the DNC documents that showed that Hillary basically had to cheat to screw Bernie out of the Democratic nomination, and the complicity of Deborah Wasserman Schultz, who was a mole, never mind her responsibilities as Democratic National Chairwoman, for which she's almost immediately rewarded, like a brazen reward. So I think that Assange is going to be very influential in this election, because he's going to be educating the American people about the Clintons. Let's assume that those who destroyed the email records made the political calculation that they would take less heat for having an unsecured, secret, illegal server and erasing the stuff they thought was problematic than they would take by their being read. That means whatever is in them must be political dynamite.
Is Roger Stone right? We're going to have to wait till October to find out, unless they can't wait, and they're going to release, or Julian Assange is going to release more. But could that be the October surprise? He's saying that it sure looks like it. Again, Roger Stone, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you trust him? You decide. But he's back in the news, and he's threatening on behalf of Julian Assange that there's going to be an election-changing email dump. So your reaction, 800-222-5222. I also have some other political news and other stories I want to talk about, not the least of which is what we're preparing for as far as military and weaponry, something I didn't know about, and I'm guessing you didn't know about, that America is no longer guaranteed a military victory because of our aging technology, and there's a whole new technology on the front. I'll tell you all about that when Peter Tilden at 10 continues after this. Talk Radio 790 KABC, Peter Tilden at 10. So this got my attention. You know how we always say our military is it. We can beat anybody if we had to. We're overmatched. Well, according to top Pentagon officials in a recent report that just came out, Russian and Chinese advances that they've done as far as their military don't guarantee that you can tell the next president of the United States that you could prevail in the early days of a conventional conflict, that we might lose escalation dominance, is what they're calling it, the ability to call the shots in future confrontations. And that's interesting, because the battlefield has changed. And also, we're talking about Russia. I mean, Donald Trump is talking about China and trade wars, etc. It's an interesting thing, and we talk about the Islamic State. But how to deal with China and Russia's military is not something you're hearing a whole lot of. There are programs that were just initiated by the Obama administration that could change warfare. However, they're going to need strong political support from the future president and spending by the next president. And these are some exotic weapons. I'll tell you about that in a minute. But the Deputy Defense Secretary, Robert Work, apparently argued that we need new deterrence strategy. And he did this in a presentation to this bipartisan Aspen strategy group that got together to go, okay, fill us in. And he went, yeah, we need to change how we do this. And this was done in February. It's awkwardly named the third offset strategy. I guess the third offset meaning they had nuclear weapons, conventional weapons, and now this, in order to restore our U.S. military dominance, which Donald Trump talks about. And what you would do is leverage our technology by creating weapons that could complicate any attack planning by an adversary. I mean, you know, Israel survives on a daily basis with that dome that they have that supposedly is capable of knocking down missiles that are flying in and can detect them as they're in the air. The concerns apparently prompting this new strategy of how to fight was previewed by General Joseph Dunford Jr., who's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And this happened at his Senate confirmation hearing in July of 2015. He said, if you want to talk about a nation that could pose an existential threat to the United States, I would have to point to Russia. And if you look at their behavior, it's nothing short of alarming. So do you understand what this guy's just said? He, as Donald Trump is saying, we should become friendlier with Putin. He feels Putin's playing us and that we are really at risk of getting into some kind of military conflict. China worries some Pentagon officials even more than Russia, according to a new RAND Corporation, a study titled War with China, Thinking Through the Unthinkable. Woof. China has apparently improved their military capabilities. So what that means is if we got into a war with them, it would not necessarily go the way we planned it over here. And it's increasingly likely that a conflict could involve inconclusive fighting with a lot of losses on both sides. So the Pentagon's looking now at Russia and China and saying this old talk of us being overmatched. And the theory there is if we're overmatched and they know we're overmatched, nobody's going to try and mess with you. You try and stay in the dominant position, but we're losing that dominance. And this general urged allies in a speech in Brussels saying we need a conceptual reawakening because there's a new lethal modern battlefield that involves new technologies, new superiority. Our military has eroded technologically, and it could undermine our conventional deterrence. So what this is called, ready for this? It's a new offset strategy. And what they're talking about, ready? Here's the technology. And this is where the costs come in. They're proposing an entire fleet of unmanned subs, an array of undersea sensors, I guess which could tell any kind of activity, seabed payload pods that could hide drones underwater till they were needed in a conflict, electromagnetic rail guns, which I've seen. They've been working on that. I've seen videos of that for a while, that can shoot like a mother. And directed energy weapons, like high-energy lasers that can blind enemy sensors, and a bunch of other newer technologies that they don't want Peter Tilden to talk about on the air with you, so they don't list them. So this is a strategy about boosting our military capability and capacity, because what I'm getting here, the subtext or not so much of a subtext, is the other countries are already on their way. They're already doing it, and we've got the intel saying they're well on their way, and that Russia and China have these top secret weapons programs, and they want to have us amp up these programs. So the disclosure of having them, and maybe me even talking about this disclosure, complicates their military planning. Other programs, like I said, are concealed, but maybe they want Russia and China to know, you know what, we can still destabilize you because we do have these technologies and we're moving them forward. But again, the moment we have a new president, they're going to be asked to look at this stuff and come to us and say, we need military spending for this, and we have to change the way the military is, and we have to no longer assume that we have a guaranteed military victory and that we are the superpower that we say we are. So fascinating. Talking not only now about fighting the Islamic State, but other military threats from Russia and China that are not being talked about by the candidates in a big way, but I'm sure after Donald Trump is briefed today and Hillary Clinton has already been briefed, they're going to know that this is going on in a big way, and this is how we're going to have to compete in the future. Stay up on the latest technology to let the other nations know we got it. Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Looking for some crosstalk, baby, believe me. I need crosstalk.
Talk Radio 790 KBC. Peter Tilden at 10, wrapping up. I'll be back in about six-ish. Dr. Drew sitting here with me. What's happening,
here
Drew?
Here I am, my friend.
I am.
So did we talk, did you discuss that this gentleman that Trump has now tapped is...
We haven't said it yet, because I talked earlier in the earlier hour about him, but didn't disclose that apparently he worked... The guy who's now joined the campaign from Breitbart... Yeah. I used to do a show here on the weekend.
Steve was his engineer.
Steve was his engineer.
Fascinating. We have inside information on some of the insiders in the Trump organization. So, and I'll be talking a lot about that. I've got Ryan Gradesky in here. And we're going to get a report from Jim Roop. Roop is on fire. Literally,
fire
now Roop is really on fire.
It is a horror story out there.
Bad, bad times. And lots of iconic buildings and institutions are burned to the ground now. In the Cajon Pass. Also, did you hear about this kid that got agitated at a restaurant with his parents and ran out and just ran into somebody's garage and stabbed these people and ate the face of the 19-year-old kid from Florida State?
Wait. He's eating dinner with his parents.
All of a sudden gets agitated and weird, storms out, gets in the car, drives away. Inexplicably
eats somebody's face.
Inexplicably gets off the road and drives, sees this couple, stabs them, kills the wife, kills the husband, eats his face.
Well, obviously they didn't have face on the menu at the restaurant, so
he was
couldn't...
upset.
Wow.
A little upset.
Now, was he already? Did the parents not know he was on something, or was
no,
he on?
No, they don't seem to know. I mean, the story is still evolving, but
wow.
The Alpha PVP or Flocka seems to be the likely candidate to cause this kind of stuff. So there's sort of a new incarnation of bath salts.
So what do you think? Did it just kick in while he was having dessert or
sort
something?
Of the way it works.
Is that how that happens?
He may have dosed up. Yeah.
Is it really? I mean, it's like throwing a light switch.
Yeah, they get what's called excited delirium, and they get agitated, and they don't know where they are.
Horrible! What a horror story.
Oh my God! And then if they're not, you know, if they get in that state, they can get something called rhabdomyolysis. The person ingesting the drug starts to break down their muscles because they're just dissolving them. They're ripping them apart, and then that clogs their kidneys, and they get kidney failure,
Holy
and they get brain damage.
Moly.
It's just a freaking mess. So everybody, really? Then I was looking around online about Alpha PVP, and there are people, kids online going, well, I'm taking some now. Oh, it feels pretty good. I'm going to dose up a little more. I don't listen to the BS that's in the press because I can prove it myself. Stop it, you idiots. Oh, my
God.
But
you know, you can't tell a kid who's 17 or 20
who doesn't know. They can't tell drug addicts.
Yep.
Glory Allred, come on in. Cosby's lawyer dropped out. Now lawyer dropped out. It's looking bad for Gloria is... will be glorious today. Glory will be very happy, I suspect. And then Wendy Patrick, this story about felons voting from prison.
Yeah,
is that bad? Is that okay?
And how low down, is that really a topic that the American public right now, with all that else is worrying on, I got to worry about felons getting the right to vote at this point?
Well, yeah, maybe that's exactly where we should be focused.
Why don't you wait until we clear up some other stuff and then we'll get to you?
No, but what I'm saying is the thing that this to me highlights what I've been most interested in is this voting season. What does it reveal about us, Americans?
Unreal. Oh, I got to ask you
and
a quick,
the voting public,
quick question. So this reporter took on Hannity a couple places about Hillary being ill and saying this is nonsense. You're doing it, and then they reinvestigated Trump's doctors.
Yeah. His records were
clarification. The hospital distanced himself from the doctor. Number one, there were typos.
No, the doctor's
recommendation. And then the funniest part of it was, like you said, and I think you addressed this before. The doctor said everything was positive.
Perfect.
Positive.
He's the healthiest man on earth.
The word we're positive on everything. Usually, positive means it's a drug. It's if you take a test comes back positive, it's bad. He said it looks like maybe a real doctor didn't do. Now that's the question: did a doctor really do Trump's medical report? And if not.
Well, a doctor
did, but
that's not a medical report.
Okay.
He released no records.
All right. So there are
He released a doctor's report, but it's not anything meaningful. Hillary gave us some meaningful information. It's concerning. It's concerning, and there's more to be revealed.
But the new report on Trump said it's implying that this may have been
Mickey. First of all, Trump is a little hypomanic. Why would a doctor would note that? A doctor in his record would sort of go, a little hyperverbal, excessive energy, question mark, you know, bipolar one. Just question mark, at least. And that's okay. That's fine.
If I came around and saw my file.
If I were president, I'd want to be bipolar.
If I came around and saw my file in your office,
Lincoln was bipolar.
Would I be ticked at what you wrote in my file?
Oh, absolutely. Of course. The way we write stuff is very disparaging.
Do you?
But because it's dispassionate. It seems so impersonal. I would call you the patient. I wouldn't call you Peter.
And then say stuff about how dare you? How
and
dare
the patient,
you?
Patient.
Well, you know what? I'm making a file on you, patient, then, Mister.
Irritable, questionable cognitive functioning.
Charming, lovely, sweet, smells
don't
nice.
Don't get into that. We just,
all right. 800-222.
We're looking for medical problems.
5222. 800-222-5222. I'm going to go right now and demand my medical records. I want to see what's on there. You're going to call Dr. Drew, and you're going to talk about all the topics he just brought up, the elections, and maybe that. And why kids are still taking those drugs if they know they can kill them. 800-222-5222. I'll be back tomorrow, actually at 6-ish, and I'll see you later.